Hello and welcome to the first in our mini-series of podcasts. Today I have Centre Director with me, Professor Alex de Ruyter.
Hello, Jess.
And visiting Professor John Clancy.
Hello, Jess.
Great to have you with us today. Now I'm going to hand over to Alex to set what we're going to be talking about today, because it is a little different and it follows on from the success of some of our recent blog posts. So without further ado, over to you, Alex.
Thanks, Jess. Hello, John.
Hi, Alex.
We've come here today again to talk about matters relating to the divorce bill with the EU, and specifically today to talk about the 10 billion euro question. Why do we owe the EU anything for pensions on Brexit at all?
Well, that's right. I think the estimated pensions bill has been put at 10 billion euros. For the UK, the Office for Budget Responsibility and others are generally coalescing around that as the figure. And the withdrawal agreement, or the draft withdrawal agreement, which is coming up for ratification, obviously this autumn, says that the UK will carry on paying our normal share, now that's normally about an eighth, of the total EU officials' annual pensions bill until the end of the transition period. Then, after that, the UK effectively pays its share of all pension liabilities incurred on and calculated as at the 31st of December 2020. Now, what it says in the draft withdrawal agreement is that the UK, once that figure has been come up with on that date, will agree to pay that in five equal annual chunks from January 2021. Or there's another route, and that is to pay about 44 varying annual chunks from January 2021 as well. That would take us all the way up to 2064. So we will carry on paying as normal for the next couple of years, and then we have this choice. But we can, in the future, go for that five equal chunks option if we decide, the UK decides, that it makes better sense. And we will then be given credit for any of those smaller annual chunks that we've paid up to then.
But here's the thing, though, John, isn't it? If I understand you correctly, in terms of this whole argument around when we started paying in and so on, the problem is, as you might say, the UK might not actually owe the EU anything at all in this regard relating to the pension fund come January the 21st, 2021.
I think there is a way to read it that is the case. And actually, even if it does owe some money, some would also argue that the UK should be asking, and perhaps should already have asked, for a huge chunk of credit in today's money to set against what it might then be judged to owe. And the reason for this is this. When the UK joined the European communities, as it was then in 1973, there's an argument that the UK then paid up straight away from year one for the pension liabilities. But those pension liabilities had technically been incurred by the EC up to then, and not the UK. Now, one justifiable reading of the position is that the UK took on and paid for those liabilities immediately. And it continued to pay up for them for decades, but they had been incurred by the EC before they joined.
So let me consider this in terms of a few questions then. So effectively then, we seem to have a position here where then shouldn't the UK now also drop and stop paying for alleged present, inverted commas, liabilities as it leaves? Or in other words, if it was sourced for the EC goose in 73, then doesn't it have to be sourced for the EU gander in 2021?
Yes, I think that is a point that many
people...
Sorry
for the colourful language.
Indeed, very colourful. I think, what source, indeed. I think it's true that some people will make a judgment that what we had to suffer, if you like, in 1973, we ought to gain if we leave in 2021. And actually, if you think about it, in terms of the people who were employed back in 1973, who we then paid full pensions for, actually the UK shouldn't have actually paid its standard share, that's currently an eighth, as I've said, of any official's full pension at all from then until probably about 2003. But every year we paid our share of the pension bill from 1973 up to 2003. The problem is this: the average age of an official actually joining the EU as an employee is unusually old, if we can call it old. It's about 35 years old. So broadly speaking, older people, if you like, in the market join historically and currently the EU at around about 35. Then they have around about 25 to 30 years of service, and then they get a pension.
I suppose I'm guessing there that the age they join reflects the fact that these people would be more experienced civil servants from their own member countries. But
correct.
Let's pick this out again. I mean, in effect then, hasn't the UK only incurred a first full liability share for an official who came to work for his or her first day on January the 1st, 1973, and then retired, well, probably, on, say, the 31st of December 2003? Or wasn't the liability to pay pensions for the service of officials employed prior to January the 1st, 1973, incurred by the original six members of the EU, and not the EU9, or indeed later the EU10, or the EU12, the EU15, the EU25, or the EU27?
Well, that's correct. Obviously, we joined the UK joined the EC on January the 1st, 1973. Liabilities had been incurred, and the EU6, that's Belgium, Denmark, France, Italy, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands, had been, if you like, the employers up until that date. And actually, there were, by the way, over 12,600 officials working for the EC in 1973. So it really is not a minor matter, especially if, as I think you would have expect to happen, you calculated how much it was we paid for their pensions then in today's money. At least, shouldn't that figure be actuarially calculated by pensions experts and then be deducted from the Brexit pensions bill? Now, that is obviously an extremely odd and complex accounting and actuarial equation. But I think that it prompts a bigger non-accounting question of principle. And that is as to whether there are any continuing pensions liabilities at all, especially as there's no actual fund in existence for its now 32,000 officials.
If I could interrupt you there, John, there seems to be an employment law stroke legal issue at stake here, possibly, as to who is the employer?
Well, that's right. You could make a judgment that this is the pensions are the administrative costs of the EU Commission, and in particular, it's a non-funded pension scheme. So what basically happens with it, it is an administrative process. The EU, and that means there isn't a fund that is being paid into, out of which these pensions are paid. The EU simply pays out the full pensions bill each year. That is the actual pensions paid to retired EU officials. It pays that each year out of ordinary revenue. Now, it does notionally include the officials' pensions contributions that comes out of their pay to do that, but again, that is a notional exercise. Now, the bill is currently running at €1.7 billion a year, and that gets paid straight out of the EU's administration budget heading. We pay our portion of that, and the UK is currently paying £190 million. That's pounds rather than euros, so I've done the conversion on today's rates. £190 million a year to that for the near and very likely distant future, regardless of Brexit. In other words, there is an important question not yet answered by the government as to how we've got here. And that is paying up for annual pensions effectively just an annual administration subscription that gets paid when you join the club, as the UK did in 1973, but stops when you leave the club? In which case, so this reading goes, the UK government should not have agreed to pay anything further for pensions on Brexit.
Of course, you could well argue, John, and I think, you know, it may very well be that this has indeed all been factored into various treaty amendments, new treaties and regulations agreed by the UK since.
I think that is possible. I think people have had a good look. They've gone in search of this, and I think we need to know whether, in order to come up with the provisions of the withdrawal agreement, that the negotiators had actually factored into those processes the any various treaty amendments, new treaties and regulations that have been agreed by the UK since. It's just that as the UK leaves, to be certain, we're not paying over the odds, and probably well over the odds, under the draft withdrawal agreement. I think the government needs to spell out exactly how agreeing to this, or being liable for it, might have actually happened. How did we come to agree to treat these as incurred liabilities, regardless of not necessarily incurring those liabilities on the ground, so to speak? So, Section 62 of the joint report of the negotiators, that's obviously the government and the EU Commission negotiators, actually says, and this is, if you like, the nub of the matter, quote, the UK will contribute its share of the financing of the Union's liabilities incurred before the 31st of December 2020.
So on that basis then, that nothing is agreed until everything is agreed, John, you would say then that we need to be much clearer about what constitutes liabilities incurred before this gets signed off in, well, hopefully October. If not December, well, we'll see. And of course, then we would need to be much clearer about what actually constitutes incurring.
Well, that's correct. The word incurring is crucial here, and defining what that actually is quite important. Have we incurred it? Are we responsible for it? Is it a notional matter? Or can we get to a situation where, for example, we offset what might have been agreed to have been incurred against the fact that we have actually paid what we have perhaps not incurred in the past? So really, I'm only posing questions here. I'm not offering solutions, because I think these are the questions that have not yet been answered adequately by the government, by its negotiators, the Treasury, and indeed the EU Commission itself. They haven't agreed, they haven't answered those questions adequately yet, and I think we need them to.
John, yet again, as always, very interesting food for thought here, and we look forward to talking about these matters further. Thank you very much.
Indeed, thanks very much.
Thank you both. That's all we've got time for today. If you've enjoyed what you've heard and would like to hear more, please check our website at www.bcu.ac.uk/centre-for-Brexit-studies, where you can also find information on our latest newsletters. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.